This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. Always got lots of stuff going on the program. Rumya Muth and Kelly McDonald, hosts of the show. And so much today, Rum, that we're going through and give you a lot of things to think about and reflect on.
Absolutely, Kels. From wayfinding to chocolate sausages. What was the name of that again?
I want to say Shanice sauce. Something like that. Shanice. It's like a combo. And leave it to Bill to have that combo for us. Oh, boy. He'd get mad because it's too sweet. He's not a sweets person. So I still say that he'd be mad because there wouldn't be enough meat taste in it.
Yeah, but there's still enough fruits.
Your favorite friends, the raisins and cherries.
Yep.
Guess raisins don't count. On Mondays, we get a chance to visit with Danielle McLaughlin. So let's bring her on. She's got a wonderful conversation that we've got to get to today on Know Your Rights.
Let's examine questions that can't be answered by a simple yes or no. Join me, Danielle McLaughlin, when we talk about how freedoms collide on Know Your Rights.
Danielle, when I say wonderful conversation, I always mean it in the sense of something to talk about that should be on our tongues to talk about, and sometimes we don't talk about enough. So I welcome you back to the show, and we're looking forward to this segment of Know Your Rights.
Thank you so much, Kelly and Rumya. I am really pleased today because I have with me a staff lawyer from the Arch Disability Law Center. Her name is Jessica DeMarinis. And Jessica was one of the lawyers who argued an extremely important case, which I'd like to add they won, for Arch, and also which will have some significance for the disability community, I believe, in the time to come. So welcome, Jessica. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Danielle. Thanks so much for having me.
Jessica, could you just give us a bit of a summary what this case is about?
Of course. So it's a case about a visitation ban in a group home, and in particular, a group home for children. So our client was a young person with disabilities. And ultimately what happened is that he was not able to have sort of meaningful contact with his family for almost 6 months. So the first 6 months of the pandemic. And this is a person who, you know, despite living in a group home from Monday to Friday, you know, because of his disability related needs, he, previous to the pandemic, he spent a lot of time with his family. So he was, you know, there with his family on weekends, during you know, the evenings in the week, and his parents maintained sort of a parental role, so made decisions, you know, made sure that made health related decisions, made education decisions. So this is a person who you know, went for a period of 6 months without contact with his family. And the reason for that was the visitation bans that were put in place by the group home, of course, in efforts to, you know, the goal was to keep residents safe, to keep staff safe. But what we were seeing in this case is that they were applied so restrictively that even this person, our client, with disabilities, who couldn't engage with, you know, FaceTime and video conferencing and couldn't have a meaningful visit in a distance way, they said, you know, there's nothing we can do for this person. And so there was no budging, no room for accommodation in this visitation ban. And so this question, this case really brought to light is you know, is that discriminatory for someone who can't use video communication and who can't communicate in a distance way? So, you know, his needs were such that he used touch to communicate. You know, he's not someone who uses words. And so that this case really brought that question to light.
This is a very interesting. So did the facility explain why they were unwilling to make any changes? Did they have a purpose, a clear purpose for, you know, resisting what had been requested?
Yeah, Yeah, they took the position that they didn't really have discretion, or they didn't really have an option to put in place a visitation ban that was less restrictive. So they were looking at the directions that were coming from the various ministries over the course of the spring and summer of last year, and saying, "Listen, we can't do anything other than what we're doing." There was some evidence that came out over the hearing that, the public health authority in that region was prepared to support the group home in, doing a more risk-based assessment of what those accommodation requests were, to see if that's something that they could put in place while still respecting the directions that were coming from the ministries. That is something that sort of played out throughout the hearing and in the decision, ultimately. But to answer your question, the group home really took the position that they didn't have any options, that they could not, they couldn't deviate from their very strict visitation ban.
I see. I know that the headlines when the media focused on this case said that it was the first of a decision made on its merits, the first of this kind of decision. What does that mean when you say a decision is made on its merits?
That's a great question. It's sort of a legal term, but what that means is a decision that really turns on the I guess for lack of a better word, I'll use another legal term, sort of the substantive rights, or actually the substance of the human rights question. And the reason why, we make that distinction that this decision is the first decision on its merits, is because there has been a number of decisions before the tribunal that deal with COVID, but more in a procedural way. So, asking for extensions because of COVID, or, other sort of delays or other kind of extensions of limitation period. So to say that, it's not the first time that the tribunal has engaged with the pandemic in general, it's just the first time that the tribunal has engaged with the pandemic in this sort of substantive way, getting really into the meat of the issue.
Which is really important. I know that often people with disabilities are up against something where somebody says, well, that's just what the rules are. And, you've got this situation where I guess the facility is trying to protect JL from COVID and the other people living in this congregate setting. And yet they, obviously they understand that it is a setting that is intended for use by people who live with disabilities, but it sounds like the safety end of things, if you want to call it that, was more in their focus than the actual, real lived needs of the individual, the young man who was involved with that. I understand that you and your colleagues at ARCH felt that this had to be addressed pretty quickly. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. When we first became involved in the case, it was mid-summer, I would say. And we recognized that, the potential for harm, is almost something that we couldn't even really articulate. But you can imagine that a child being separated from his parents for that long of a time, that was something that needed to be addressed and on a very urgent basis. And so we made a application or a specific request to the tribunal that this case was heard on an expedited basis. And so that's why we were able, and we were successful in that request. And so that's why we were able to, bring this case to a hearing within that six months period of time, and which is frankly quite remarkable. The tribunal doesn't it is very high threshold for the tribunal to expedite matters in that way. So we were very pleased that the tribunal appreciated the urgency of the situation and the potential harm that could be experienced by this person who was not being accommodated.
And yet, if you think of it in terms of a young person who doesn't see his family from March till, I believe it was August, I mean, it's hard to imagine that harms aren't already done in that space of time, considering that his method of communication has to do with touch and being right there with his family members. I you know, my fear personally would be that he would experience this as having been abandoned. Do you have any sense of how this young man did experience the separation with his family?
I mean, that was a really difficult part of the case. I mean, just from a human perspective, kind of engaging with, you know, exactly as you've put it, sort of this unthinkable harm for this person who's been separated from his family. But then also legally, it was very, not to say that you have to establish kind of acute harm in order to make out the case of discrimination, but that did come into play in the case as it does in determining remedies. And yes. And so the tribunal did want to hear, you know, what were the impacts on this person. And so we again relied on firsthand accounts of people that are close to him, in terms of trying to show the tribunal the impact that this had on this person, again, who, you know, the tribunal notes in the decision how it is a bit of a tricky situation because this particular applicant wasn't able to explain in his, you know, in his own words, how it impacted him. So, we relied on, you know, the testimony of the family when they met him again for the first time and were able to engage with him in a way that was appropriate for him. And it took a really long time before they started to see his personality come out again. You know, he was very mm-hmm. withdrawn, which was something that was alarming for his family. This is a person who has an infectious personality. He, you know, he smiles and is always, you know, making happy noises. And so for them to experience this withdrawn version of himself was very alarming and very concerning. And that spoke volumes as to the kind of harm and that he had experienced over that period of time.
What do you think that the residential facility should have done? I mean, even prior to Arch having taken this to court, do you think that, you know, obviously there were rules, but In your view, could they have done something differently?
Well, you know, what's interesting is the tribunal's decision actually speaks to this, you know, a good portion of the decision actually speaks to this point exactly. And so what they could have done differently was engage in this accommodation process. So you made a really good point a few minutes ago about how safety is sort of used as this kind of be all end all stop point. And really what the tribunal says is it's not, you can't just say COVID safety and then the conversation is over. It's an ongoing conversation. You know, do you need to reach out to the regional public health authority? Can they assist in implementing visitation bans in a way that's safe, but that also, you know, also addresses the individual needs of the residents?
This is very important. I know that very often on this particular segment of Kelly and Company, we talk about, you know, asking people what they need, not telling them what they need as far as accommodations go. Clearly, the young person in this case, it wasn't able to communicate what he needed, but his family was, and they seemed to be pretty able to get across what happens. You know, this past weekend, many of us living in Ontario were faced with a situation where, you know, there was a new rule about how we were going to be kept safe. And, you know, many years ago when I was teaching about civil liberties, as I did for a long time, I used to joke that, you know, when you said the word safety, everything else falls off the table because you never see people out there picketing that, you know, with signs saying down with safety or safety is bad for people. They don't do that, right? So as soon as you use the word safety, people go, oh, well, it must be right. But I think it's really important to know that there are legal clinics like Arch, which are willing to stand up and say, yes, you know, we're not against safety, but wait a minute, let's really talk about how we get there and how safety will be different for different individuals. So I think it's very important that Arch Disability Law Center took this. And I know that it seems like it, you know, for most of us, it would seem like a very long time to wait for a decision. And yet this was really expedited. This was rapid. I guess that you were able to argue that it needed to be done as rapidly as they possibly could. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely. It was important to us to make those arguments and you know, say, you know, it's hard for us to even tell the amount of harm here, but it's important. And, you know, we satisfied the threshold to satisfy the tribunal that it needed to be dealt with very quickly.
Well, how would you suggest, or what would you suggest to families of people with disabilities who feel their family member is not receiving adequate or proper care for their particular needs?
Definitely start the conversation about accommodations, be able to articulate what those disability-related needs are. And if people are interested in getting legal advice, we do provide free summary advice for persons with disabilities in Ontario at Arch Disability Law Centre.
Well, that's really important to know. And I've found Arch Disability Law Center's website. It's not difficult to find. And I think what we've been talking about today is something that we will be talking about well into the future. I want to thank you very much, Jessica, for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me. It was great to chat.
That was our that was my guest, Jessica DeMarinis, from the Arch Disability Law Center. She's a staff lawyer there, and she was speaking with us today about a very important case that was decided last week.
Danielle McLaughlin here with Know Your Rights. A wonderful conversation between her and Jessica right here. You can join us again for Know Your Rights every Monday right here on Kelly & Company. We're going to take a break. We'll wrap up the program and see what is coming up on Now with Dave Brown. We'll tell you a little bit about our show for tomorrow and even give you a preview of what's coming up next weekend on AMI TV's AMI at the Movies right after this.
You've been listening to Kelly & Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.